from Redeemer Broadcasting. This is Holding All Things Together for the second weekend in July. I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter. Recently, Border Czar Tom Homan reported that the total number of Border Patrol encounters for the entire month of June 2025 were 6,070. The total of this level is less than half of a single day's encounters under the Biden administration on many days. Significantly, none of the 6,070 were released into the U.S. Zero. Zero illegal aliens were let into the U.S. in June. That has the effect of keeping Americans safer and our census numbers more accurately representing our tax-paying citizens. June's numbers represent the lowest monthly number of apprehensions at the border ever recorded by Customs and Border Protection. Contrasted with the previous administration's efforts, this is very good news. In June of 2024, Border Control encountered 130,415 illegal aliens. Again, this past month, that number was 6,070, and none were released into these United States. Here to discuss this good news is Jarrett Stepman, columnist for the Daily Signal.
There's been a dramatic drop-off, even in just border encounters, which have dropped since last year by a tremendous amount. Down from last year, there were, I think, in June, about 130-some thousand encounters at the border. This year, there's only been 6,000, and none of them have been released into the country. Obviously, that's remarkable. That's seismic. I mean, in 2023, I believe there were about 145,000 encounters at the border just in June alone. So what we've seen is a dramatic turnaround in a very short amount of time.
Also ahead, Pastor Bill Shisko reminds us that the moral law of God is a display of God's holiness. Later in the program, Jerry Wiss continues to look into the book of Genesis. We see the land of Canaan, the land of promise, was left to Isaac and his family. Isaac relives the challenges that his father Abraham had experienced. There was a period of 20 years with no child. Finally, Rebecca conceives, two boys, and one would be stronger than the other. The older would serve the younger. As history plays out, we often are surprised by the way that God works. Finally, we'll take another look at this week in history. All this just ahead on Holding All Things Together.
Well, we're dealing with the form of sound teaching that is summarized in the Shorter Catechism, questions 40 through 42. Hopefully, if you have a copy, you can get one from Redeemer Broadcasting. And that whole midsection is about the moral law of God that is summarized in the Ten Commandments, and the moral law of God that's further summarized in, you are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your strength, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and you're to love your neighbor as yourself. Now, that's jarring, because there's a lot of people that don't like law. They don't even like to talk about the law of God. They feel like they're being stifled by it, and yet Jesus says the summary of that law is about love. It's about loving God with your whole being and loving your neighbor as yourself. Well, how do you view the law of God? How do you view it? Well, the law in the first place, it's a display of God's holiness. It's kind of cool to be able to look at the Ten Commandments and realize that God himself has no other God before him. God himself treats his name as holy. God himself is not covetous. It displays the perfection of God. It also really convicts of sin because, well, if you break the law at one point, you've broken the whole thing, and it draws you to, thank the Lord, the sin-bearer Jesus. But it's also a standard for our holiness. If you want to follow the Lord, you don't want to have other gods before him. You don't want to worship him the way he has it commanded. You want to honor his name. You'll work and you'll honor his day of rest, the Christian Sabbath. You'll respect authority. You'll honor your father and your mother. You'll respect life. You won't kill. You'll respect sexuality and your bodies. You won't commit adultery. You will respect property. You won't steal. You'll respect truth. You'll tell the truth. You won't bear false witness. And you'll be content. You won't be covetous. So you see, the law is good if you use it lawfully. And using it lawfully is what? They're guardrails. They're not your nutrition to get to heaven. They're guardrails so that you don't go off on the way, on the path of following the Lord Jesus Christ. So if you look at the law that way, you'll be using the law lawfully, and then you'll understand why the writer of Psalm 119 says, I walk at liberty because I keep your precepts.
On the phone line with us today is Jarrett Stepman, and he works for the Daily Signal as a columnist. Jarrett, it's great to talk with you today.
Well, thank you so much. It's good to be back with you.
I noticed that you were writing an article about illegal aliens and how that zero were let in to the U.S. in June. Can you tell us about your article?
Yeah, absolutely. There was major news. I think there's been a series of major announcements at the U.S. border, in large part because of the change from one administration to another. There's been a dramatic drop-off, even in just border encounters, which have dropped since last year by a tremendous amount. Down from last year, there were, I think, in June, about 130-some thousand encounters at the border. This year, there's only been 6,000, and
wow,
none of them have been released into the country. Obviously, that's remarkable. That's seismic. I mean, in 2023, I believe there are about 145,000 encounters at the border just in June alone. So what we've seen is a dramatic turnaround in a very short amount of time, I think largely based on the policies of President Donald Trump. It's very clear now that given a strong executive action in enforcing immigration laws, has turned what became a border crisis under President Joe Biden almost immediately from the time he entered office to, when you look at the border now, it's almost like a ghost town. It's incredible the change that's taken place in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, they're doing a very good job, excellent job. I'm worried about those who got away, or those that we know about that got intentionally placed into the heartland of America. What can we do about them?
Yeah, I think that's why the administration has been very aggressive about using ICE and aggressively pursuing deportations. I think it's particularly concerning, especially given that many of those who were never detained at all are potential terrorist threats. That was very clear from some of the reporting from Congress in the last few years that some of the gotaways are known to be on the terrorist watch list. They're now in the country potentially and have the ability to potentially harm American citizens. It appears that the administration has been very aggressive with both DHS and the FBI in trying to track those people down and deporting them and and removing them from the country. Of course, the problem is much bigger than just those who are on the terrorist watch list. We have many people who came in who are part of criminal organizations that were basically drug cartels that have killed many Americans, who have brought in a huge amount of illegal drugs, especially fentanyl, into America. The Trump administration has been very aggressive about, first of all, putting some of them on a terrorist list so that they can aggressively use the federal government to break up those organizations. And that's, again, that's a big way the outlet into America was because of those criminal organizations through human trafficking, through border crossings, have done a tremendous damage to a lot of border communities and really towns and cities all around America. So there's aggressive now move from the administration, not just to seal the border, but to make sure that the people who don't belong here will be removed, people who came here against the laws of this country.
Yeah, it's very important that they be removed. And I'm going to say something that will raise the ire of some people, but I believe it's the Christian thing to do. We need to protect our own people, our own tax-paying citizens that are peaceful, that are law-abiding, that are paying their taxes from people just coming in and thinking that, I don't know what they're thinking, but they're taking over in some places, and I believe it's very dangerous. I was reading an article online written by a guy who, well, a lot of people would know, and he was pointing out he lives someplace in the boonies of Pennsylvania, and he goes to a local park, and there the parking lot is filled with people that he knows are illegal aliens playing loud music, you know, music that he can't understand the words to. He goes to the local swimming hole, and he again finds this loud, obnoxious noise, people from another country smoking pot. He goes to a local flower farm in the middle of the sticks, he says. It's an annual tradition, and it's like another country, packed with people that he knows they're not from here. You know, where do they belong? And who's supporting them? Do they have jobs? Are they paying taxes? I don't know if people have waked up to the fact that we cannot absorb this many people being dropped into our midst. And the Biden administration lied to us when they were claiming that the border was under control.
They completely did. And I think it really gives a lie to their demand for the border bill, the Senate border bill, that was in the last year of the Biden presidency, that they tried to push through Congress, saying that this is the only way that they could control the mayhem at the border. In fact, actually, many of the provisions, it's quite incredible. I mean, they were allowing, they wanted to continually allow more people per day than entirely came in during this month of June, in which Trump was president. So clearly the issue was not the law itself. The law is on the side of the administration. This is about executive action. This is about the willpower from those who actually run our government to uphold the laws of this country that have been, I think, very unjustly broken by a lot of people. Now, not everybody who comes here is necessarily a villain, but it allows many villains to come into America. And so that has caused, that has been a danger to the United States. Of course, it's insulting to those who have gone through the difficult legal process to come into the United States. It's often a lot of times legal immigrants who are most frustrated with the fact that we have a government that doesn't uphold the laws that they've had to follow. And so you have an administration now. President Trump did a very good job, I think, during his first term. But now there's a much bigger challenge because the Biden administration let in millions of people, many of whom are completely unaccounted for, into the country. And so I do think you're seeing a very big change sort of overnight, certainly at the border, where I think the message has become very clear. It's not just a matter of policy, but also the rhetoric for the administration. The people know now that the law will be enforced. It'll be enforced very aggressively. And so many people who were coming before, a lot of these organizations that were trafficking in people, have stopped their business. And I think that's good all around.
Yes, absolutely. There are some teachers within the Christian ranks who are very effeminate, very cowardly. And it's almost like they've traded the sword of the spirit for the flag of surrender. They lie to us. And I love the church, but I want to see the church pure. And I don't want us to become woke. There was a lady out there that wrote about the selling out of pastors. And my hat is off to her for that book. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, Jarrett Stepman, how could they go about doing that? And also tell us about your book that you wrote.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they want to reach out to me, you can always email me. It's my name, Jarrett.Stepman@DailySignal.com. Of course, I write for Daily Signal, the website, which is, I think, a tremendous news source, not just my work, but the work of my colleagues, which is tremendous on this issue and many, many others. My book, which is The War on History, The Conspiracy to Rewrite America's Past, is about the phenomenon that we've seen certainly in the last 5 years of attacks on American history, an attempt to distort what the country was all about from its origination. We saw, of course, many statues and many figures of America's past be literally torn down. I think it's part of a general narrative that's been built up that the origins of the United States are fundamentally illegitimate. It's something that people should not be proud of and celebrate. And so my book corrects the record. I go through and talk about American history, talk about the founding of the country, why these things were remarkable and important and still worth celebrating today. And we should be able to celebrate these things that are American, because it not just allows us to appreciate and be grateful for the things that we've been given, but allows us to pass those along as well. We really truly are especially we should be especially grateful for the things that we've been given in America, a truly great country. So that's what my book, it tries to correct the record and give people a positive vision of what this country should be.
Amen. We really appreciate you, Jarrett Stepman, a columnist for the Daily Signal and also author of The War on History, The Conspiracy to Rewrite America's Past. And let me tell you, you got that title correct. It really is a conspiracy. Jarrett Stepman, my friend, may God bless you and help you to continue to do a good job. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This week, Jerry Wiss continues to look at the book of Genesis. We see the land of Canaan, the land of promise, was left to Isaac and his family. Isaac relives the challenges that his father Abraham had experienced. There was a period of 20 years with no child. Finally, Rebekah conceives. Two boys, and one would be stronger than the other. The older would serve the younger. As history plays out, we often are surprised by the way that God works. This happens in our lives too. Jerry is a frequent contributor to Holding All Things Together and is a writer for Christian Renewal magazine.
Last time we saw how the covenant household of Isaac is protected, segregated, we can say, for lack of a better term, from the other households of Abraham. Ishmael's family, the families of Keturah, Abraham's second wife, and the children of Abraham's concubines. These all settle in other places in the region, while the land of Canaan, the land of promise, is left to Isaac and his family. God works through families, as he had in Isaac's time, but not exclusively, which is why the church is to evangelize and why we support missionaries. The days of the patriarchs were different. It was through the family line that the covenant would pass on from one generation to another. That's not exclusively the way salvation is had and known to be had today, but it remains a key way of covenant continuity from one generation to another. However, even this is not the case in all instances. Recall how the covenant separated families in previous generations. The covenant family of Adam and Eve brought forth Cain and Abel in the next generation, one rejected by God and the other accepted. Noah's sons also divided along covenant lines, with Shem receiving the blessing and Ham getting rejected and relegated to subservience to his brothers. Ishmael and Isaac, as we'd recently seen, were also divided along covenant lines. And so we should not be surprised to see something similar with Isaac's sons, Jacob and Esau. But before we consider these famous brothers, notice that Isaac, in his own way, is reliving the challenges that his father Abraham faced. Rebekah is barren for 20 years before she bears the twin boys. Isaac, we're told, cries out to the Lord, and the Lord granted his prayer so that Rebekah conceived, we read in Genesis 25:21. 20 years without a child. Again, the importance of children needs to be underscored here. It was via primogeniture only that the covenant continued in those days. The promise of a deliverer looms in the background. the one who would deliver the children of Adam and Eve from the curse. In more immediate terms, the land of Canaan, where Isaac now dwells, is promised to Isaac's progeny. How would that be possible if there were no children? One can sense the concern, perhaps anxiety, of waiting, even as Abraham had. But Rebecca conceives twin boys. What a happy occasion. And yet the Lord tells her that there are two nations in her womb, and the two peoples shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The older shall serve the younger. As with the sons of Adam, then Noah, then Abraham, the line of antithesis is drawn in the family. This does not mean that this is so in every covenant family, but it is so here, and it remains possible today as well. Note that part of what God tells Rebekah is somewhat cryptic, while another part is clear. The one shall be stronger than the other. Which is this, Esau or Jacob? Well, clearly Esau grows to be the more manly of the two. He is a skilled hunter, a man of the field, whereas Jacob, a quiet man dwelling in tents, appears to be less domineering. Although, as we'll learn, and as his name indicates, he is crafty. Is it Esau, then, that is the stronger of the two? The Lord also tells Rebecca that the older will serve the younger. The first shall come last, and the last first. This then elevates Jacob as the stronger of the two, certainly in terms of God's appointment and blessing, even though he seems a Loki to the Thor-like Esau. In Isaac's encampment, it's Esau who is noticed, drawing the eye and the ear of the household, all those around him, including Isaac's. And yet Jacob, the quiet man dwelling in tents, whose craftiness would at first glance not commend him to be the covenant recipient, is, as we will see, the covenant recipient after all. The Lord is full of surprises. Just as we think we have how he works figured out, we're redirected away from our facile expectations. God's ways are not ours.
Time now for This Week in History. July 7, 1981. President Ronald Reagan nominates Sandra Day O'Connor to be the first woman Supreme Court Justice in U.S. history. July 10, 1925. Dayton, Tennessee. The ACLU and Clarence Darrow come to the aid of high school science teacher John Thomas Scopes, who, despite a law that makes it a misdemeanor to teach any theory that denies the story of divine creation, taught his students the theory of evolution. Despite the carnival atmosphere created by Darrow, the jury finds Scopes guilty of breaking the law, and he is fined $100. Darrow spends much of his time discrediting his opponent in the case, William Jennings Bryan. In most cases, to the victor go the spoils, but in the aftermath of the case, Darrow is hailed as a genius, and Bryan and those who disagree with the theory of evolution are mocked. July 11, 1804. Vice President Aaron Burr meets his political adversary, Alexander Hamilton, in Weehawken, New Jersey, having challenged Hamilton to a duel with pistols to restore his reputation. Some accounts say Hamilton fired into the air, feeling the duel was morally wrong. Others say he simply missed. Burr does not miss, hitting Hamilton in the stomach. Hamilton dies the next day. New Jersey has no law against such duels. The vice president returns to Washington, D.C., immune from prosecution. And July 12, 1979. It's disco demolition night at Chicago's Comiskey Park. Discount tickets offered to any fan who brings a disco record swell the attendance for the doubleheader between the White Sox and the Detroit Tigers. A sellout crowd of over 40,000 are augmented by almost as many fans outside the stadium. A dumpster is detonated in center field between games, and fans rush the field, throwing vinyl records, tearing up the grass, chasing players, and lighting vinyl bonfires. Conditions are so bad that the visiting Tigers are awarded a forfeit, since conditions are too dangerous to play the second game. That was This Week in History, events as man recorded them, as God ordained them.
That's our program for this week. Thanks for joining us. Holding All Things Together is a production of Redeemer Broadcasting, and the views expressed are those of the participants. If you'd like to help us continue to produce this program and distribute it to others, please consider supporting us. Our mailing address for your tax-deductible gift is Redeemer Broadcasting, P.O. Box 1520, Olive Bridge, New York, 12461. You may also email us at ministry@redeemerbroadcasting.org. For Holding All Things Together, I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter.
God willing, see you next week.